This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Saturday, June 8th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. On Monday, the president's new threatened tariffs on all Mexican goods may well go into effect. The economic damage could be significant, but is this really a new kind of power grab for a president, particularly this president? Gene Healy, vice president of the Cato Institute, analyzes the legal and constitutional elements of this new threatened tax on Americans. The president has threatened new tariffs, a 5% tariff on all goods coming in from Mexico that is scheduled to begin on June 10th until Mexico solves, to the president's satisfaction, I suppose, the border crossings issue into the United States. How is the president planning to do this? And by that, I mean, what is he relying on in terms of presidential authority?
Yeah, it's never a dull moment in this administration. He, in his statement on May 30, he invoked the authorities that he says are granted to him by something called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. And under that act, he claims the power to hike tariffs on a monthly basis, going perhaps all the way up to 25% in October. If Mexico doesn't crack down on U.S. border crossings to his satisfaction.
All right. So how does this differ from the other powers that this White House has assumed that others have not assumed, or at least not done so quite so boldly? There are statutory provisions allowing the president to raise tariffs, to declare certain national emergencies. This seems somehow different.
Well, it is. We talked on this podcast before about in terms of the use of executive power for a self-styled businessman president. President Trump hasn't really been all that entrepreneurial in the use of executive power. He's like most modern presidents, he's been an imperial president. That's par for the course. But he's mostly he hasn't really, in most cases, forged new frontiers in the use of executive power. He's mostly aggressively used authorities that were already expanded by past presidents. And there, up until recently, there were, I'd say, two exceptions to that, areas where you could actually call them new executive power grabs. And those were the use of national security powers to impose steel tariffs, and of course, back in February, the declaration of a national emergency at the border in order to get funding, additional funding that Congress wouldn't give him for his border wall. Well, this new move under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act is a third genuine executive power grab. This is something new. The invocation of the IEEPA, this is not a way in which it's been used before. The law was passed in 1977. It was part of a wave of post-Watergate reforms. It was initially supposed to rein in presidential emergency powers somewhat. It was narrower than what preceded it, which is the 1917 Trading with the Enemy Act. It is a part of the Emergency Powers Reform, the National Emergencies Act, which requires the president to make a formal declaration and identify the authority he's relying on. So even though the IEEPA was supposed to be somewhat narrow the president's emergency authority, it's still incredibly broad. It empowers the president to, quote, deal with any unusual and extraordinary threat, having its source in whole or part outside the United States, to the national security, foreign policy, or economic or economy of the United States. And he can do that he can use this act if he first declares a national emergency under the National Emergencies Act. The National IEEPA has sort of been, it grants broad powers, but it's been an all-purpose statutory tool for economic sanctions. It's most of the ongoing national emergency declarations and our permanent emergency government rest on this statute. But it tends to be used against like so-called rogue states. There's an emergency declaration dating from 1979, the Iranian hostage crisis that Carter implemented and that's been renewed. It's also used to target, you know, various international bad guys like drug kingpins, computer hackers, and terrorists. One thing it has never been used before, though, for is to impose tariffs, much less tariffs, comprehensive across-the-board tariffs on a friendly nation and a major trading partner. So this is a genuine innovation on Trump's part.
Yeah, it seems odd that there would be, if you're using it to prosecute people, that's one thing. But if you're using it to create and creating a contingency that, oh, well, if you meet this target that I have set, then I will remove it.
Well, it's even weirder to use it to set trade policy across the board, not with a rogue nation, but you know, with someone you have normal relations with. And what's also odd about it is, you know, there are actual trade statutes that already delegate a staggering amount of authority to the president. You know, one of them is the statute that Trump used to impose steel tariffs. It's Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962. And that law says the president can, quote, adjust imports when when he gets a finding from his commerce secretary that the current levels of imports threaten national security. So that law is clearly about trade, talks about restricting imports. Trade is in the title, for one thing. But the IEEPA doesn't talk about directly about imposing duties or setting trade policy writ large. It says that the president can, upon declaring a national emergency, investigate, regulate, or prohibit transactions in foreign exchange or transfers of property in which foreign nationals have an interest. So the language is very broad, but the intent really seems to be directed at targeted economic sanctions, not blanket authority to set trade policy. So, you know, one thing to ponder is, why did he do it? Did he not want to bother his Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross and try to get a finding out of him, as he did with steel tariffs? Or I think more likely the way that these two laws are worded, it was too much of a stretch for the administration to say, as it would have to under the 62 Trade Expansion Act, that the imports themselves threaten national security or constitute a national emergency, because the imports, the business we do with Mexico, you know, imports of auto parts and cars and beer and avocados, they don't actually have anything to do with the supposed crisis. They don't have anything to do with illegal immigration. They're just a pressure point that the president is using to try to get what he wants out of the Mexican government.
So is that legal?
You know, like many things, it's one of those things we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, there's what the intent of the law is, there's what the statute says, there's the constitutional non-delegation doctrine. I think those are all good reasons to doubt, to think that this move is incredibly dubious. You know, the courts have been reluctant to step in and overturn a presidential directive, or the non-delegation doctrine, the idea that Congress cannot simply give away vast swaths of its legislative power without setting down clear rules, is something that, you know, hasn't really had a good year since, I think, 1935. So we're going to see if he implements it. Can he get away with it? I think the problem here is, you know, Congress has delegated broad authorities, and those authorities are being used by aggressive presidents in ways that they weren't intended. We've basically empowered, I'm borrowing this line from the filmmaker Rob Montz, but we basically empowered this president to start a trade war from his couch. And if we are worried about that, and I think we ought to be worried about it, the Tax Foundation came out with a research just this week that said that just the initial round of the tariff increases on Mexico could be the biggest tax hike on consumers in almost 30 years. If we don't want presidents to be able to do that, you know, from their couch with a very few hoops to jump through, I think Congress really has to start reining in some of these authorities.
I was about to ask, is there a duly elected branch of government that could perhaps with some authorities that are superior to the executive branch actually do something about this?
Yeah, well, in theory there is, and maybe in practice. Apparently, this may be a bridge too far. There's a talk on Capitol Hill, apparently a couple of administration officials went in for a lunch at the Senate, pushing with the Republican conference, pushing this idea, and they got an earful from the senators. There's a talk about one of the things that they can do is under the National Emergencies Act, they can pass a resolution of disapproval that overturns the national emergency. They tried to do that in March with the national emergency that the president declared to get funding for his border wall. But that's a heavy lift. They need a veto-proof majority in order to make that stick. Another idea is what Mike Lee has introduced legislation to do. He has something called the Article 1 Act that really is designed to change the default setting on emergency powers. The way it works now is the president moves, and then if Congress can muster a veto-proof majority to overturn his action, then they can, you know, which they basically have never done, they can overturn his action. Lee's act would reverse those presumptions, and emergency declarations would sunset after 30 days unless they are specifically approved by the legislative body that is supposed to be making the laws in the United States. And I think that's something like that. We can argue about 30 days. Something like that would be a start because, we have for decades now delegated vast amounts of legislative power to the president, and we're starting to see that authority can be used creatively, aggressively, and maliciously. And if Congress doesn't want to constantly be trying to play catch-up, it should get out in front of this problem.
Gene Healy is a vice president at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.